The first method is what we traditionally do, is the states early on in the year have working groups with all their DOD and interagency partners, and they identify how the plan would be and any gaps that they would have in capabilities to those plans. And then they put together what we call EMAC agreements, and those are Emergency Management Assistance Compacts, which basically says if you're short a capability in your state, then I from another state will support you in that in the event that you need it. We took and put those state plans together in preparation for Hurricane Irene, which, as you know, started off in Puerto Rico and Virgin Islands and moved all the way up the coast.
So it sounds like the National Guard Bureau is in constant coordinating and planning mode even before these disasters, even before we're sure they're actually going to hit.
Yes, our planning conferences start about 12 months out before the season starts to make sure that we've did all the proper coordination between all the interagency people who would support such an operation and the Department of Defense.
So give me an example of the type of capability that might be missing that would need to be filled in by the National Guard or a neighboring state. Let's take Vermont, which I think was a little bit surprised at the flooding they got.
Yes, you know, as the storm was projected, we really thought the big impact was going to be on Long Island and New York. And in fact, Mother Nature gets a vote in this and went to a little farther northwest and dropped somewhere between 10 and 15 inches of rain in a very short period of time. What Vermont quickly found out that they were short of, and they knew these going in, was engineer support and aviation support. So what we do is we create regional packages that are able to support on a regional effort. We had one package in the South, basically the Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina area. We had a package in the center, which is the Virginia area. And then we had a package in the North, in the New York, Vermont, Connecticut, New England states area. So we were able to move aviation assets from those packages quickly into New York and Vermont when there was a need for it. Now, the engineer package really comes after the state has a chance to look at the damage and look at the assessment. Almost always requests for engineers are post-landfall and not pre-landfall. As you saw in the media, a tremendous amount of infrastructure damage in Vermont, bridges, roads, just completely gone, that is going to be a whole-of-government approach to make the corrections fast enough to get their economy back up and going and make sure it doesn't impact it. So not only is it initially the life-saving and search and rescue that we do, but then we go into helping where we can with repairs with infrastructure as part of a whole-of-government approach. In close coordination with FEMA and the Department of Defense to get critical assets where they're needed, when they're needed. And in this case, several hundred engineers who are, you know, moving dirt and gravel and repairing roads and going to put in some temporary bridges until some permanent bridges can be put in place.
We're speaking with Major General David Harris, Director of Domestic Operations for the National Guard Bureau. Now, Defense Department during the Irene emergency announced the that they announced four dual status commanders. Tell us what that is.
Yes, what we found out as a result of Katrina and the series of hurricanes that came through then was we didn't have an effective enough unity of effort, and that's because we ran parallel commands where the Title 10, the active duty, would have their own command track, and the National Guard, Title 32, would have their own command track. Most effectively, you would have those two organizations pulling their efforts under one command. But you know, by law, by policy, that wasn't capable of doing that. So we made some policy changes. We ran some courses to get mainly Title 32 National Guard general officers prepared and qualified to be a dual status commander, but also a Title 10 active duty general officer could be a dual status commander too. And then we put a program together that if it's a National Guard dual status commander, he would have a Title 10 active duty deputy with him. So we would end up with a blended staff of active duty and National Guard. And what that is to make sure that we've got the best unity of effort to support the local first responders and the states and governors in whatever capability gaps they might need.
And how did it work out?
It worked out pretty well. Now, it's the first time we've done it, so we still have some things to do close some of the gaps. But we were able to identify the need for a dual status commander. We were able to get that authorized and get them in place in a very short amount of time. And then, as it turned out, we did not have any Title 10 active duty assets needed, but if they would have been needed, we would have prepared to do that under a joint effort under a single dual status commander.
So what's your top lesson learned from this whole effort using the dual commander status people during something like Irene?
Well, especially with Irene, where, in most hurricanes, we're looking at it hitting one or two states. When you have a scenario that can have somewhere between 13 and 17 states involved, doing this early up front so you're not having to do it after the event starts is critical. Having everything in place so you can bring the most assets to bear as quickly as possible is probably the number one lesson. And I think we did it timely enough this time that if we would have needed to have a whole government approach with both Title 10 and Title 32 and interagency, we'd have been prepared to do that.